Hello and welcome to Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Well, hello again.
Hello from the Witch.
And hello from the Vicar. We're going to be able to meet soon, so we'll be able to do a photograph.
I know, I can't wait.
Do we have to go to the hairdressers first?
Well, considering I've probably only been to the hairdressers maybe 5 times in my entire life, I'm thinking not. But, you know, if you want me to smarten up, I will for you, Maggie.
No, not at all. I just find it fascinating how hot long hair is.
Oh, yes. So put it up, and then it's heavenly cool.
I'm trying to. I stick it through the back of a baseball bat when I'm walking, but I've got...
It's so feathered
and layered. It won't go into a proper ponytail yet. Anyway, we digress. It's beautiful weather on Dartmoor. We're very grateful in our house that we've got our own artesian well, so we won't be hit by any hose pipe ban, which is probably coming in soon. So what I wanted to really talk about today, if it's okay with you, is tough love.
Tough love. Ooh, okay.
Tough love. I took the weekend off, and that's one of the things I am very tough love about, which is taking a Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Away from the internet, away from the news, because unless you do, your life is just run by it. Mm-hmm. And people don't realise how addicted we get to all this incessant need for new information. Well, it's not new information. Did you know, for example, news doesn't mean new at all? It means north, east, west, south.
You're kidding.
No, that's what the original name of it was. It was drawing information from all over the world.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's just a glorious thing to know.
Because news isn't new. The way we've got 24-hour news now, it's just the same thing reworked.
I saw an absolutely fantastic thing the other day, which I thought was so true, which was that it used to be that you would be on the news, you would be presented with facts and have to make up your own opinion, and that now you are presented with a sort of swathe of opinions and have to work out whether or not the facts they're supposedly based on are true or not. Just thought that was so funny. Oh,
that's entirely possible. I spent 25-30 years as a journalist, mostly for the BBC. In the old days, and I'm terribly good at saying in my day, because I'm sure we had integrity then.
Yeah. I would just like to point out that you have not had your day yet.
Thank you.
Today is still your day.
Thank you. But I was really quite proud of much of the work that I was able to do in the news. I was able to help people. I used to listen. There was many a time when I was sent to be the person to talk to somebody whose child had died in a road accident or whose partner had died. And you have to knock on the door. I mean, nowadays people don't bother visiting. They'd have the phone numbers or they'd get on the internet or whatever, but you'd have to knock on the door and I would have to stand there and I would always say, I am so sorry I'm here, but this is a news item. It's going to be published. Please make sure I've got it right, because it will hurt you so much more if I haven't. And usually that worked. And it wasn't me being manipulative. It was actually, please let me help you in this.
Yeah. Yeah, people are going to talk. Let's talk the truth.
Yes, and the tough love part of it comes along the lines of, please be aware that we are so programmed nowadays that we don't realise that we're programmed. And please, all of you are listening, please consider a weekly Sabbath.
Oh, definitely. Yes.
I mean, that is one of the very good things that Judaism brought along and Christianity brought along. And I know I was bored as God knows what when I was a child on a Sunday. And I used to do my homework in the afternoon. It was, I couldn't go and have any fun. But people don't allow themselves boredom now. No. And I think you've said before, boredom is the mother of creativity.
Totally. Absolutely. The crucible in which creativity is magically cooked.
Go out and entertain yourself.
Yeah.
Find something to do, something to build, something creative, something to work with.
Yeah.
I read on social media the other day that somebody had got mumps and that they were asking for Netflix recommendations to watch while they got mumps. And I thought, gosh, how interesting how the world has changed. Because when I had mumps at 22, and very embarrassing it was too, because I caught them from somebody I had no business spending time with, but we won't be going in with that. Those were the trolloping days. I tried one of my brother's Airfix kits.
Mm.
It was Napoleonic Wars, horses and soldiers, hussars and cuirassiers, that kind of thing. And so my mother went out and got me several others of them. And I spent the whole of my time with mumps painting figures and learning about the Battle of Waterloo. I'm sorry, I'm sounding terribly sort of... Well, no, I just loved it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was creative. I kept those for years.
Yeah, gorgeous. I remember making those with my brother as well. It's funny, I think maybe you need a brother to get into FX.
Maybe you do need a brother, yes.
That's very sexist on me in generalisation. But yeah, when I had mumps, I think I was about 5, or actually possibly less. And I think it was jigsaw puzzles. And I remember being so in love with one of those things where you bang a shape through a board. Remember those? And we had we had a little one and it had legs and it had 4 cylinders, probably in the 4 primary colours. I remember specifically the red one and the green one because I've always had a thing for red and green, as you'll know if you've been in my kitchen. And a beautiful little wooden hammer, and it just felt so satisfying to bang those things through. Bizarre. Anyway, I have moved on since I was 6. But yes, you know, now, 6, 22, whatever, you would be plonked in front of the telly and it's utterly passive.
Yes. And you're being entertained, so you don't have to get into the discipline of entertaining yourself.
Mm.
And tough love is all about discipline. And this weekend I took a 3-day Sabbath, which I needed. It's ridiculous in lockdown, but I do so much work online.
Mm.
And of course, without online, we wouldn't be doing the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I'm very grateful for it. But it's really important to get downtime. I spent one day doing a jigsaw and loved it. And the other 2 days, I watched a video from Caroline Mace. You remember Caroline Mace?
I think Caroline Mace is amazing.
She is an extraordinary teacher, and she is Marmite.
Oh, really?
You either love her or you can't stand her.
Okay.
Because Caroline Mace does not take prisoners. One of her favourite phrases is, get a backbone.
Yeah, I could see how that would be Marmite for some people.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I was listening to her a lot when I was ill, and I was just going, oh, God, I need to hear this. However, I'm going to put the link to it's a free workshop. It's about 4 and a half hours of audio in 2 sections, which she did in London last year. Mm. So a bit of it's predictive of what's going on right now, which is I wanted to share it with you. I hate the word share, but it just came out. I wanted to tell you about it, which sounds bossy, and then discuss it with you. Because the webinar was called, it was about spell casting, being under the power of spells and the spells that you don't realise that you're casting yourself.
Mm.
And spells, of course, are patterns and habits that we get into and stay in, but they can be imposed on us.
Mm, too right.
And she was absolutely fascinating on this, especially about the patriarchy, which we've been talking about.
Mm.
And there's a bit right at the very, very end. I could just tell you about the whole workshop. It was just so, wow, out of the water, blowing my socks off. And let's face it, I haven't got very many socks left after lockdown. Thank God it's so sunny. And she said, the patriarchy's been going for a very long time. It's pre-Christian. And I looked this up. I did some research on it. And actually, patriarchy comes from the Greeks. Mm-hmm. It's not from Christianity. Christianity adopted it because people were adopting Greek thoughts at the time. And Greek democracy was basically you can vote, you can do what you like as long as you're a man and you're not a woman and you're not a slave.
Right.
And it got built on from that. Christianity actually came along to start with mostly for women and slaves.
How utterly ironic.
Yeah, because many of the other religions wouldn't have them.
Yeah.
And it was all about there is neither male nor female nor slave nor free in Christ Jesus, in the cosmic Christ. And then, of course, Rome took it over, but I digress. Caroline said that the patriarchy is a spell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's had us in thrall for generation after generation, thousands of years, and the spell is now cracked.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons you can tell the spell is cracked, because when a spell cracks, there's huge reaction that fights to save it. And that is why we have Brexit. and Donald Trump and things like that, because according to Caroline, and I think there's a lot of validity in it, humanity changed. We sort of upgraded ourselves when we invented the nuclear bomb.
Upgraded?
Yes, because we had to. We'd suddenly invented something that could destroy the whole world.
Mm.
So in response to that, the soul had to step up a little.
Right.
And started us thinking about changing things, which of course got a huge reaction. But it's since the 1940s that we have had women's liberation, whatever you want to call it. And she says, on the one hand, the patriarchy spell is fighting back hugely. But on the other hand, we have got gender fluid people coming in.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot more gay folk, or at least people who are opening up about being gay, being honest about it. We're having people who want to be called we instead of he or she. So we've actually got humans willing to be born for this new world.
Mm, yeah.
Coming in to say, no, it's not one or the other. It's yes and.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, that makes so much sense to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she also said, the MAGA, Make America Great Again, and the Brexit aspects are a plague. They are a plague of division, which is the cracked patriarchy trying to impose its way on the world. And guess what we've got now?
We've got
COVID-19, which is being referred to as a plague.
But I would venture to suggest to you that COVID-19 is not a plague from the patriarchy, but a response from the mother herself.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. But when she said plague, I thought, this is the response.
Yeah.
This is our time for consideration. This is our time when actually, even though I know it's difficult, lockdown is easy, but that's bringing more fear into a lot of people. I know it's difficult to be disciplined in this time, but this is the time to step up spiritually.
Mm.
And to step up spiritually requires tough love.
Yeah.
And one woman was talking to Caroline. Again, this is right at the very end of the workshop. So if you want to watch the workshop, I'm not doing spoiler for you until you're really, really into the workshop, I promise you. She was talking about forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
about radical forgiveness. And she was talking up the roots of Christianity better than I ever can. She was saying, basically, we've had a series of God humans, God men, God women. But the one called Jesus came in to show us that God understood betrayal, arrest, false imprisonment, being beaten up, being mocked, being humiliated, and being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the people that God is with, more than anybody else, the people who are going through that.
Nice.
And I've lost my train of thought. Oh, yes, so she was talking about forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think hopefully everybody listening knows forgiveness is never about condoning what happened.
Yeah.
It's always about setting yourself free from the spell of the wickedness or unkindness that was done to you. Because if you stay blaming, you're under that spell. You're in that thrall.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You're in woundology and you won't heal.
Yeah.
And I remember listening to the mother of one of the children who was murdered by Myra Hindley and Ian Brady many years ago. And the body of her child was never found. And I cannot imagine the trauma on that. But 30 years later, she was still raving angry and furious and hatred. And she actually said, she said the Lord's Prayer, but she never said, as we forgive those who trespass against us, because she couldn't.
Mm.
So she was under such a huge thrall of that tragedy. And nobody can take away that that was a huge tragedy to happen. But she could not let go of it.
Mm.
And Caroline was saying, you have to learn about forgiveness. It's not easy. Oh, God, no. It's advanced metaphysics is forgiveness. And don't forgive too early either. I used to try and do that. But this girl put her hand up and asked a question. And she said, what about the murderers of children? It's children, Caroline. It's children. It's children. And she just said, and your point is? No, of course it's not right to hurt or murder children. But my point here is that you are actually shocked that humanity kills children. Don't you know us at all?
Yeah, that's a sad statement.
Yeah. And she was saying, you are under this spell of righteous anger. What would you do to people who kill the child? And she said, I would kill them. She said, then you're exactly the same level as they are. Mm. And this woman's, but she's just saying, that's the thing. What we don't realise is with our continual moaning and groaning and grumbling, and I moan and groan and grumble. I came in to my husband this morning after a phone call before I talked to you and had to moan and groan to him about it, you know, but it was, then it's over.
Yeah.
You know, so, and she was saying to this, she actually said to this, oh, you're a rascal, which lightened it beautifully. And that's a cabalistic term for somebody who's locked in hod, who's either a trickster or a moaner.
Mm.
And she was really playing with this girl to lighten her up, to lift her, and saying, but you have a choice. You're either part of the problem or part of the solution. And the solution is love.
Yeah.
And the people who kill, who wound, who hurt, who create wars, who break their word, who betray, are all wounded.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's all about the choices. And we all make wrong choices, but you have an intuition and it will tell you when the choice is wrong. You'll feel it. Mm. And then you've got another choice and you can always make a choice to love. And she said the only way you can define anger as holy is when the situation has to be changed and you are going to wade in,
yeah,
but you have no intention or desire to hurt anyone, including the perpetrator.
Yeah.
And that's my lecture over for the moment, but yeah. Just thought, wow, your thoughts, please.
Well, I think that's so exactly right, that there's a kind of righteous, healthy anger that can only possibly, I'm trying this out on my tongue as I say it out loud, that maybe it's only okay to feel the blaze of anger when you are in the moment that you can affect, or when you're in the moment of, you know, say it's something like that, you're in the moment of hearing about it. There is a righteous, healthy anger, definitely, that blazes through us. But my sense of anger, and just to kind of bring it back round to we were speaking about tough love, is that we have to be tough love with ourselves too, is that if we get stuck in anger or indeed in any emotion, then we are under the spell of it and we are holding ourselves in a spell of stuckness. And that all of these things is a hideously corny phrase, which is, let's put the motion in emotion. But, you know, I can't find a better way of expressing how, for me, we're supposed to, or what seems healthy to do, is to move through these feelings to a place of resolution. And so, yes, anger, good. As long as it then comes to a place of action or understanding, or like you're saying, forgiveness or acceptance, or, you know, something else that is more comfortable than anger. Because if we stay in emotions like anger, they will eat us. And actually, I think anger in particular, that kind of vitriolic...
blame?
Blame, I guess. It's so easily turned against ourselves when we don't go through motion,
yes,
with our emotions. And that, again and again, I've seen that ultimately anger, when we hang on to anger, we will in the end internalize it, either overtly turned against ourselves or very, very covertly. And that the spell of anger in us is a terrible thing. You know, it's a sword of destruction, basically, however it's wielded.
I'm going to upgrade that first comment slightly by saying I think tough love is vital for us first. Mm. Don't do tough love for anybody else until you're willing to do it for yourself and you've tried it. Which comes back to spiritual discipline, which is one of the reasons I love studying Kabbalah. And I studied with a man who's very disciplinarian. And a lot of people didn't like it. It suited me because I was probably going to run away if I didn't have that, if you see what I mean. He wasn't anything like Stuart Wilde's original teacher, who used to say the meeting's on Friday 3:30 in South Africa in Cape Town, and if you didn't get there, you're out.
Whoa.
Now, that really is a spiritual discipline. You've got to really, really want that. But it required the learning that we did required us to go down to London every Thursday night for a meeting that started at 8 o'clock. And if you didn't get there by 8 o'clock, the door was shut. Mm. Didn't matter if you'd driven 3 hours. The door was shut because they were going into sacred space. And you respected that. And it's really very difficult, I think, even 30 years on, for people to accept that level of discipline, because we have this sort of, no, I'm going to go into entitlement in, I really am going on in a minute, but I wanted to just say something about the difficulty, I think, with the feminine soul, whether it's in a man or a woman, is that we've been raised, certainly my generation, hopefully not following generations, that a girl might cry, but she mustn't be angry. And a boy can be angry, but mustn't cry.
What a dreadful, dreadful spell that is.
It is a spell. And I'm still, to a certain extent, in thrall with it. Because if I get angry and try and tell somebody about my angry, I will cry.
Yeah.
But I now know to push through that. I'm incoherent when I cry. But if I get angry, very, very rarely do Alan and I get furiously angry with each other. But it happens. We've been together a long time, 19 years. You know it's going to happen. And now I know to just get to go, stop it, just stop it, stop it, stop it. And then he knows it's not actually personal against him. It's, I can't take anymore. I'm feeling really angry and I'm going to crack.
Yeah.
You know, so you have code words and signals in the relationship, which means that it means it's nothing about you, but I can't handle this anymore.
Yeah.
Give me space. And that's a tough love discipline, because we're training each other over those 19 years to have these code words, like safety words.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, great.
Yeah, and one of them is segment. Which basically, he comes into the office while I'm in the middle of something and he wants to say something to me. And he'll say a sentence and I'll go, segment. Because that actually means, if you want my attention, my full attention, I have to go into a different segment of my brain, stop what I'm doing now, put the lid of the laptop down and listen to you. So do not go on talking now. Unless it was just simply, would you like a cup of tea, which is lovely, thank you very much, because I've got to change gear.
Yeah.
And that's about the tough love of knowing my own astrology and knowing I have a Taurian Mercury, and that I can own, my brain can only hold so much information at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I want to just go back round to you saying about sitting at the feet of a teacher who is kind of doling out tough love, if you like, and that, oh my goodness, there's such a loud airplane going over my house, sorry, I hope you can't hear it on the thing.
I can hear it.
It's mental.
Probably one of the RAF or something. Anyway, go. Yeah.
Okay, sorry, so tough love is that I think as a teacher, maybe I do dole out tough love, but I think more than that, I exhibit tough love on myself, and that I really, really, I don't know, stand by the statement that we can't expect of other people that which we do not expect of ourselves.
Absolutely.
And that, so I just want to be really clear that bossing people around isn't the same as tough love, and that like Carolyn Rice says, there's a sort of requirement that there be some really serious backbone in anyone who is both doling it out and embodying it. And that if you don't have that, then it just becomes bullying.
Yes. Because wounded people hurt other people.
Yeah.
There's this analogy of a wounded predator, especially, and we humans are predators. A wounded predator will be vicious. To defend itself is the last attitude it's got. And we are a wounded species, which is why we're vicious. And the very fact that we are a wounded species and there is all this make America great again, let's close our borders to other people, at which a virus goes, oh, really?
Tell me about that.
Tell me about that. Yes, wasn't the plan to open borders and be, you know, and not go to war with each other or that kind of things? You've got to love it. And most of us aren't listening, I know that, but the few of us who are listening, we have to somehow work out what is our spiritual discipline to help us be who we came to be. Mm. And right now that's really important. And one of my favourite prayers is, show me what is mine to do.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Mine to do, not doing somebody else's for them, but mine to do.
Yeah, I think that's such an incredibly important prayer. I really do. Because, I mean, particularly amongst those of us who do spiritual work, especially healers, there's a terrible tendency to, and, you know, I've done this myself, definitely, to imagine that everyone who comes to your door is your responsibility and that you just keep saying yes. And, you know, we can't. If everyone who came to my door got yes, especially yes in the time frame that they're usually wanting it, I would have had a number of nervous breakdowns over the years. And that question, show me what's mine to do, is a huge part of the same thread that means that you take the Sabbath off and that you have 3 days off when you realise that you need it, and that you are speaking with respect about somebody like Carolyn Nace and tough love, because there are healthy boundaries and structure and just good old common sense in how you go about your work, in total alignment with and partnership with listening to the spirits and listening to what they're really, really saying, not what you imagine they might be saying.
And in the Jewish mystical tradition, which the Christianity adopted to start with, it's very clear that we tend to get our strokes from helping people, especially the feminine.
Strokes as in pussycat strokes.
Lovely girl, clever girl, what a good girl you are, mommy's little girl, you know, okay. That kind of thing. And we often mistake what's known as the feeling triad on the tree of life for the soul. Mm-hmm. And the feeling triad is helpful and willing and kind, and is the one who puts the chairs out at the workshop and makes the tea and all that kind of stuff, which is very helpful and lovely. But the soul serves humanity. Mm. And the soul has far more power that says, no, what you need is to go away and think about what you did. Mm. Rather than, I'm going to save you, I'm going to rescue you. And I think a lot of us, myself specifically, having been codependent as a child and certainly into my adult years, would run around trying to help.
Yeah.
And fail, because there was never enough help that I could give. And even if I did do some help, it was temporary.
Yeah. That, you know, back to the patriarchy, that is, or the broken patriarchy, one of the things that, you know, certainly women of our generation, and I still see it now, as little girls, we were very strongly encouraged to be a good girl, help make the tea, sweep the floor, you know, those were our toys, yes. Apart from anything else, was the little play kitchen and the play dustpan and brush and all the rest of it. But, you know, that as certainly as a child, yes, you absolutely got your strokes by being a little angel and going off to make a pot of tea and all that. And that then feeds into that whole thing of women mustn't get angry and
Men mustn't cry,
and we're only as good as the last good deed we did, kind of thing. And yes. And just, oh my goodness, yes. All I can say is hallelujah for they, them, and for all the ways in which the new generations, and I see this really strongly in my sons and their friends, they're not buying that stuff. Mm-hmm. Although, having said that, I do also see another world, when I go and visit people who are kind of outside of what I suspect is a rather paradisical bubble in which I live, that there are still little girls being given instruction on being a you know, that being a decent human when you happen to be in a female body requires you to say yes and to do as you're asked.
Yes.
And that, you know, that's the greatest spell of all, is that we should do as we're told without question.
Yes. Yes. And conversely, because we weren't all raised by witches or wise women or anything like that, there's a tendency also to go into willfulness now, which is also out of balance, which is, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that because I want to. And we're in the stage of humanity where we've individuated much more. We're not living totally in tribes. We have stronger opinions, but we are, again, we go back to the Jewish mystical tradition, which is basically the story of the Exodus, where you come out of slavery, which is the doing what anybody else tells you what to do, or you're in trouble, into the wilderness, which is finding out who you are, and then going to the promised land, which is giving who you are to the divine, working from the soul. And we've got this pattern at the moment of, I come across quite a lot of people as clients who are desperately willful. Not so much, I feel that this is right, though that can be a manipulative way of doing it, but I won't do that. I'm not going to do that. Which brings us back to, they're the ones who find Caroline Mice the unpleasant sort of Marmite.
Yeah.
So there's always going to be this balance. And yes, it's really, really important that we start saying, hang on a minute, why? And there's been some good news recently about female genital mutilation being banned in one of the African countries.
Yeehaw!
Doesn't mean to say it's going to stop, but it's a very big step. And I saw a TV program with a girl who went to ask to research it and find out about it. She I can't remember if she'd had it done to her or not, but she was saying to the elders, the women, say, "Why are you doing it?" "Well, because our grandmothers did it." And that is no reason to do
anything. No. So I'm intrigued by that whole, everything you just said, which I can't paraphrase that accurately, but the first bit was,
there's willlessness, which means you're willing to do everything everybody else does, and willfulness when you won't do anything.
Yeah, and then there's going to God. So to me, there's a whole massive question in my version of reality, which is that there's something wrong to me with all of that. So firstly, because I think that what we call individuation in our culture is actually isolation. And that we've forgotten that we're a herd creature, a tribal creature. And
so that's brilliant. I love that. Thank you. Yes. Yes.
Good. I'm glad you liked it. Thank you. The second is that I really do believe, and I think science has possibly arrived at the point where it's going to back me up with this, but I don't know. I'm not any kind of a scientist. That to me, mind is not something you will find inside your head. It's something external, and it's something that I think we share. And in my work, I see that over and over again, is that especially in women who are entering their crone years, we start to really, really connect with the mind that is the shared sense of how stuff is. And I see women experiencing the rage and the grief, for example, of our shared experience. And as I've probably said repeatedly, to me, that's what the crone is. She's the one who steps into service for the greater good. But therefore, there is a sense of there being a human mind, or certainly, I think, a cultural mind, and that our cultural mind is totally and utterly enspelled. And that therefore, on the one hand, that there's this really weird interweaving of many contradictory threads between, we're a herd creature who's become a very isolationist creature. We've all gone into our little two adults, 2.4 children, whatever it is, lives, or even really, really singular lives. You know, one of the things that's come up in all the reporting on COVID is how your average Swede lives entirely alone. Mm. And, you know, there are lots of people alone. But that we still buy into a generalized mind, and that the generalized mind holds sway. It's like the cultural mind. Mm. And that then interwoven amongst all of that is the fact that we are made up of the same stuff. We are in spirit and we contain spirit. And so, yes, we can go to God and God can be over there. The goddess can be over there. The void can be over there. But it's also us. We are the divine. We contain the void. We are both create and uncreate. And so there's this incredibly complex weaving of what is utterly true and wholesome and what is completely enspelled and separated in every single one of us. We embody it. And so the story has to be, as ever, kind of addressed from two polar opposing points of view, where they're this wonderful and in the middle, where we've got to address our singularity. What's mine? What's exactly my exquisite thread? What do I think? In what ways will I not comply? And be really awake and conscious about that. I can't believe I just said those two words. I'm sorry. And
well, I said shared, so you were over.
Cheers, mate. but on the other end, that by doing that work, each one of us, we're going to affect the big mind.
Mm. Oh yes, butterfly effect, absolutely. Yeah. And that isolation bit, that's perfect, because another of the things we're taught is that if you are contained in a clear, strong container like a village or a good family, but a village, mm. so you know who you are in that container,
mm-hmm.
you will individuate at the correct time, in the correct way. You will become yourself, and then you will ask, what is mine to do?
Yes.
But if you're raised in a cracked vessel, which, let's face it, nearly all of us are,
mm.
especially now we live in cities and we are isolated from each other, we individuate too early because it's not safe to be in that tribe. And that's when we become isolated. Or we enjoy another tribe which has got the same damage to it, the same wound. That's what leads to terrorism.
That makes perfect sense to me. Yeah.
Should we stop there?
I imagine we're well out of time, are we, as usual?
We are.